doesn't want to be flying me anywhere. And that he's a giant asshole. I make a point of turning my back on him to face Billy. Will my things be safe here?
I'll guard them myself,
he promises, crossing a finger over his chest for added impact. Fine, I grumble, tossing the track bag to the gravel, wishing that Billy were my pilot. Whether he can even fly a plane is of little concern to me at this point.
And make it fast,
Jonah adds.
There's heavy fog rolling in tonight, and I'm not getting stuck somewhere.
With that, he disappears around to the tail of the plane. By all means, feel free to leave without me, I mutter quietly, because finding my own way to Bangor is sounding better with each passing second. Billy scratches the back of his shaved head in wonder as he eyes the surly pilot.
He's not usually this grumpy,
he murmurs. I guess I'm lucky then. Or maybe I'm the reason Jonah's in such a foul mood. But what did I do to earn this hostile attitude? Besides pack too much, that is. I drop to the ground to begin rifling through my suitcases. Acutely aware of Billy standing over my shoulder, watching me as I consider my must needs. This nylon bag is a weekender. Just big enough to fit 2 or 3 days worth of clothing. Less when I include my cosmetics and toiletries bags along with all my jewelry. There's no way I'm leaving any of that behind. I glance up in time to find Billy's eyes perusing my collection of lace panties. He quickly averts his gaze.
Ah, don't worry about Jonah. Something must have crawled up his ass.
Billy pauses.
Something big.
I hope he made sure to get its weight for takeoff, I mutter, reaching for my running shoes. Billy's barking laughter carries through the cool breeze. Chapter 6.
It's gonna get bumpy on the way in,
Jonah announces from his seat in front of me, his deep voice through the headset competing with the roar of the plane's engine. Worse than what we've been going through up until now? Because my brain is rattling inside my head from the turbulence over the past hour.
You thought that was bad?
He chuckles darkly as we cut through a low-hanging cloud. We may have taken off in blue skies, but on this side of the state, a thick layer of gray drapes the horizon. I tug my cable-knit sweater tighter around my body for comfort as much as to ward off the chill. Every jolt sounds clunky and hazardous, as if metal panels might pry right off the body of the plane at any moment. Jonah probably wouldn't be so amused if he knew that I fished out a plastic bag from my purse and have been holding it open in front of me for the past 15 minutes. How I've kept down the chicken tacos that I devoured in Seattle this long is no small miracle, but they're churning in my stomach now. The plane's nose suddenly dips downward. I brace myself and yank on my seatbelt to make sure it's snug. Then I concentrate on taking deep breaths, hoping that will soothe my frazzled nerves as well as my guts. What the hell was Agnes thinking, sending Jonah to get me in this death trap? I can't wait to phone my mother and tell her that she was right, that I'm so not fine with weaving around mountains while packed into a tin can like a sardine. That no sane person would be fine with this, ever. These Alaskan pilots are crazy to choose to do this. How much longer? I ask, trying to keep my voice steady as the plane tilts this way and that.
10 minutes less than the last time you asked,
Jonah mutters. He radios the dispatcher and begins rhyming off codes and talking about visibility and knots. And I glare at the back of his bulky frame, wedged into the pilot's seat. If he's uncomfortable in this tiny fuselage, he hasn't uttered a word of complaint. In fact, he's barely said anything to me this entire trip, mostly yups and nopes and closed-off answers that stalled all attempts at small talk that I made. I finally gave up, and instead focused on the frayed ash-blonde wisps of hair that curl around the brim of his baseball cap and over the collar of his jacket, and not on the fact that just outside the thin metal walls and glass panels are thousands of feet through which we could plummet to our death. a reality that seems more certain with each sudden and violent jerk. The plane careens to the right, earning my panicked gasp. I squeeze my eyes shut and keep taking calm, steady breaths, hoping that will quell this bubbly nausea. I can do this. I can do this. This is just like flying in any plane. We're not going to die. Jonah knows what he's doing.
That's Bangor up ahead.
I dare peek out the window and below, hoping the promise of my toes touching the ground soon will help with my nerves. Lush, green, flat ground stretches out as far as the overcast skies allow me to see, a vast expanse of land mostly untouched by the human hand. It's peppered with streams and lakes of all shapes and sizes, and one wide river that snakes through it. That's Bangor? I can't hide the surprise from my voice as I study the crops of low rectangular buildings huddled along the river's edge.
Yup.
A pause.
What were you expecting?
Nothing. Just, I thought it'd be bigger.
It's the biggest community in Western Alaska.
Yes, I know that. That's why I thought the buildings would be, I don't know, bigger, taller. With all the scrambling of the last 2 days, I had little time to educate myself on where it is I'd be going. All I know is what I read on my phone while waiting for my plane this morning. That this part of Alaska is considered tundra for its flat land, that the sun barely sets during summer months and barely rises during the long Arctic winters, and that most of the towns and villages around here have native Alaskan names that I can't pronounce. Jonah snorts, and I immediately regret admitting my thoughts out loud.
Doesn't sound like you know much at all. Weren't you born here?
Yeah, but it's not like I'd remember anything. I wasn't even 2 when we left.
Well, maybe if you'd bothered coming back before now, you'd know what to expect.
His tone is thick with accusation. What the hell is his problem? We hit a pocket of turbulence, and the plane begins jolting violently. I brace myself with a palm against the icy window as that queasy feeling begins to stir again, and the solid form deep inside me begins to rise. My stomach's preparing to empty its contents. Oh, God. This is bad, I moan.
Relax. It's nothing.
No, I mean, my body has broken out in a sweat. I think I'm going to be sick. His quiet curse carries into my ear.
Keep it down. We'll be on the ground in 5 minutes.
I'm trying, but...
You can't puke in here.
Do you think I want to? I snap, fumbling with my plastic bag. Of all the things I dreaded, vomiting is up there with the worst. And now I get to do it sitting behind this asshole.
Hell, 6 other pilots available, and I had to be the one to get you,
Jonah mutters to himself. I close my eyes and lean my face against the window. The ice-cold glass helps a bit, even with the jarring bumps. Don't worry, Calla. It's no big deal, Calla. That's what a decent person would say, I mumble feebly.
I'm here to get your high-maintenance little ass to Bangor, not to soothe your ego.
High-maintenance? My ego? I crack one lid to shoot daggers at the back of his head. All pretenses of politeness have dissolved. Does my dad know you're such a giant dick? Jonah doesn't answer, and I'm glad for it, because talking makes my nausea worse. I push off my headset and go back to drawing long breaths through my nose and exhaling slowly through my mouth, fighting my body's urge to evacuate its contents at any given moment as I'm bumped and jostled in our descent toward the runway ahead. The tiny 2-seater plane teeters side to side like a seesaw before the wheels touch the ground, bouncing several times, and then finally sticking. Miraculously, I somehow succeed in keeping my tacos down through it all. I breathe a sigh of relief as we coast down the runway. To the right, I spy several large rectangular buildings in various colors, forest green, fire engine red, navy blue, with 2 commercial planes like the ones I flew earlier today. We had left, though, toward a crop of smaller steel-gray buildings, the largest of them wearing a white and aqua blue sign that reads, Alaska Wild. My heart begins pounding in my chest. I was here 24 years ago, too young to remember, but I was here, and I've imagined this moment countless times since. A short, stocky guy wearing a fluorescent vest casually waves his orange sticks, guiding Jonah to a spot at the end of a line of six planes. In front of us is a row of four more, behind them another two. All of them are larger than the one we're in, I note. I want to ask questions. Are these all my dad's planes? What part of the airport are we in? Is the collection of colorful warehouse-like structures actually the city airport? How many people work here? But it's become apparent that Jonah has no interest in enlightening me about anything. So I bite my tongue. I can ask Agnes. I'm assuming she'll be more pleasant to talk to. Or I can ask my father, who I'm about to meet. The sudden urge to pee hits me. No sooner has Jonah shut off the engine than he's yanking off his headset, popping open the door and hopping out with surprising grace. I remain a while, though, enjoying the crisp, cool breeze that skates across my face, working like a salve for my churning stomach.
"Come on, let's go,"
Jonah barks. I'm almost done having to deal with him, I remind myself as I slip out of my seat. I stall at the plane's doorway to size up the distance to the ground, struggling to figure out how I'm going to hop out in my wedge heels while keeping my purse on my shoulder and my hat on my head without falling flat on my face or twisting an ankle. I should have changed my shoes when I was pilfering through my suitcase to get the essentials. Without a word of warning, Jonah seizes me by the waist with his giant hands and hoists me down as if I weigh nothing at all, earning my squeal of surprise. Setting me onto the ground, he then dives back into the plane to retrieve the nylon bag tucked in behind my seat. He unceremoniously drops it to my feet like he's tossing trash to the curb. It lands in a puddle.
"Here, puke all you want now."
He thrusts the plastic bag into my empty grasp. I peer up at his face, still masked by all the mangy hair and sunglasses and baseball cap, pulled low despite the lack of sun. How long has he been growing that bush for, anyway? Years? There are long, wiry hairs sticking out in every direction. I guarantee it's never seen a pair of scissors or a comb. Ever. My disgusted expression stares back at me from the reflection of his lenses, and my mother's words about falling in love with a pilot suddenly hit me. I burst out laughing. Is Jonah what she would call a sky cowboy? As if I'd ever fall for this guy. The skin between the bottom of Jonah's aviators and the top of his unkempt beard flushes.
"What's so funny?"
he asks warily. Nothing. The cool wind picks up in a gust, sending strands of my long hair fluttering around my chin and threatening to lift my hat from my head. I brush away the strays and clear my throat. "Thanks for flying me here," I say politely, keeping my expression flat. He hesitates. I can feel his heavy gaze on my face, and it makes me uncomfortable.
"Don't thank me. It wasn't my idea,"
he says, then flashes a tight, insincere smile, revealing straight, beautiful white teeth. And here I had assumed he'd written off all basic grooming and hygiene habits. "Hello there," a female voice calls out, distracting me from thoughts of punching Jonah right in that perfect grill of his. I gladly turn away from him to see a petite woman marching toward us. That has to be Agnes. For the past 3 days, I've been imagining what the woman behind the calm, soft-spoken voice on the phone looks like. The friend who must be more than that. I guess I assumed, stupidly, that she'd look something like my mother. Agnes is about as opposite to my mother as you can get. For one thing, she's so small she's almost childlike, especially in an orange safety vest that's at least 3 sizes too big, baggy men's jeans, and clunky work boots. An outfit my mother wouldn't be caught dead in on her worst day. And unlike my mother's sleek and impeccably colored bob, Agnes's raven black hair, lightly peppered with gray, has been chopped into an unimaginative pixie length, almost as if she was annoyed with it one day and took a pair of scissors to herself without using a mirror for guidance. For another, Agnes is an Alaska native.
"You made it,"
Agnes says, stopping in front of me, giving me a chance to take in her features. She has a pretty, round face, aged with fine lines across her brow and conspicuous crow's feet at the corners of deeply set, hooded eyes. I'd put her in her mid-40s if I had to guess.
I did.
She smiles wide, showing off pronounced cheeks and slightly crooked front teeth the color of bone china. Finally, someone around here seems genuinely happy to see me.
So, is he...
My words drift as my gaze wanders from the door Agnes exited moments ago to the other buildings around us, where half a dozen workers in reflective vests load cargo into planes. I search their faces while I hold my breath, an odd mixture of nervous butterflies and nausea competing for attention inside me.
Ren had to go up to a site near Russian mission to drop off supplies, she explains, as if I know where that is. He'll be back soon.
Oh, I stammer. He's not here for my arrival? He knew I was coming, though, right?
Yes, of course. He's excited.
That wide smile wavers a touch, enough to make me suspicious. He knew that his daughter, who he hasn't seen in 24 years, hasn't talked to in 12 years, was arriving tonight. Couldn't he have found someone else to drop off supplies so he could be here to greet her? Couldn't he have sent Jonah instead? Or one of the 6 other available pilots, according to Jonah's grumblings not long ago? Better yet, seeing as he's not too sick to fly, why couldn't he have come to Anchorage to get me? Is my dad intentionally avoiding me? Will I be dealing with another Jonah who is less than thrilled that I'm here? I struggle to keep my expression calm as my emotions war inside me. Disappointment swells after a day of counting down the hours and minutes until I'd meet the real-life version of the picture, until I'd hear the soft, easygoing timbre of his voice again. But with that disappointment comes a wave of the same pain-numbing resentment that absorbed me so many years ago, my way of coping with the raw realization that I would never be a priority for him. And then, tucked somewhere in the recesses of these volatile emotions, is relief that I have a bit more time with my feet on Alaskan soil to gather my strength before I have to face him.
How are your flights? Agnes asks, as if sensing my suddenly heavy mood and wanting to keep it light.
Fine, for the most part, anyway. I steal a withering glance over my shoulder. Jonah's tinkering with something on the plane, seemingly ignoring us. Agnes's eyes trail mine, and when they reach the burly pilot, her brow tightens a touch. But she's quick to shift her attention back to wander over my face, stalling on each feature.
You've grown up so much.
She must see my confusion because she adds quickly,
Your mother used to send your school picture to Ren every year. He kept them in a frame on his desk and swapped them out when a new one had come.
Aside from my university graduation picture, the last school photo my mother would have sent was from 8th grade, which means Agnes and my father have known each other for a long time. It feels awkward to ask within minutes of meeting this woman, and yet I can't hold back anymore. So, are you and my dad married? There's no ring on her finger, but she also doesn't look the type to wear jewelry.
Me and Ren? No, we're just us. It's complicated.
Her gaze shifts downward, skittering over my wedge heels before landing on the worn track bag.
Yours? She asked doubtfully.
It doesn't sound like I'm going to get more out of her about their relationship yet. No, my luggage is back in Anchorage. It wouldn't fit. I can't believe I fit, to be honest. I explain what Billy said about sending my bags over tomorrow. She shakes her head.
I'm sorry. I told him to take one of the Cessnas.
Wait a minute. Jonah told me that that one was the only plane available.
Don't know what she's talking about,
he calls out, though his focus seems glued to a clipboard as his giant hand passes over it with a pen, casually checking things off. My mouth drops open as I stare at the lying bastard. A soft sigh escapes Agnes.
Come on, Calla.
She reaches down to grab the strap of the nylon bag and then hoists it over her shoulder as if it weighs nothing at all, even though it's probably half her size.
Let's get you settled before your dad arrives. I'm sure your mother would like you to check in.
There's Wi-Fi at the house, right? I wave my phone in the air. Because I haven't been able to get a signal since Seattle.
You must be dying,
Jonah mutters under his breath, but loud enough for me to hear. I roll my eyes.
No, you won't get a signal. Only GCI works around here. But yes, you'll be able to connect from home,
Agnes says.
Jonah, take care of things here for me, will ya?
He grunts an answer, which I assume is an agreement. Agnes seems to take it for that. She beckons me to follow her with a nod of her head toward a small crop of vehicles parked on the far side of the office building. Wait, do you mind taking a picture?
Oh, sure,
Agnes says, her eyes widening with surprise. I hand her my phone and then pick my path gingerly through the puddles to lean against the plane, angling my body in a pose that I know is especially flattering, my left hand pressed gently on the top of my hat.
Smile,
Agnes calls. Oh, no, it's okay, I call out as I look into the distance at another plane that's descending from the clouds. Keenly aware of Jonah's eyes on me, my ears pricked to catch whatever snide comment he might have to make. Thankfully, whatever thoughts he has, he keeps them to himself for once.
I took 3. Is that good?
Perfect. Thanks. I avoid Jonah's gaze as I collect my phone and follow Agnes. So, you work here? She smiles at me warmly.
Going on 16 years now.
Wow. My dad and Agnes have known each other since I was 10. That's 4 years where we were talking and he didn't mention her. Has it been complicated for all that time or just part of it? And what do you do here?
What don't I do is more like it. Fly planes. I don't do that. But I keep busy with a lot of other stuff. Dispatch and payroll, bookings and shipment contracts. All that boring stuff. And I take care of the guys. We have 35 pilots now.
My eyes widen.
Seriously? Of course, they're not all full-time, and they're scattered all over the place. We've got one guy in Unalakleet, 2 in Kotzebue, Barrow, of course, for the summer season, a few in Fairbanks, all over the place. It's like having dozens of sons. They can be a handful, and I don't see some of them for months on end, especially the ones up north. But I love them like they were my own.
I'll bet. Though how anyone but legitimate flesh and blood could love Jonah is beyond me. I'm so distracted with my thoughts that I'm not paying attention to where I'm walking. My left foot lands in a deep puddle. I cringe from both the shock of the cold, muddy water against my toes and the damage it's going to do to the suede insole. I guess it just rained?
It always just rained around here.
Agnes tosses the duffel bag into the back of an old black GMC pickup truck that's seen better days. The side of it is dented and scratched, and rust is eating away at the wheel well.
I hope you brought good rain boots with you.
I did. Beautiful, expensive, red hunter boots. I pause for effect. They're in Anchorage, with the rest of my clothes.
I'll make sure we get your things here soon.
Agnes's eyes flicker back toward the rows of planes. She opens her mouth as if to say something more, but then decides against it.
Let's get you home.
I hazard a glance. Jonah is strolling across the lot toward the hangar, his gait casual and assured. He turns my way once before dismissing me entirely without so much as a wave. Good riddance. If I don't have to deal with him for the rest of the week, I'll be more than happy. The drive to my father's house is not far, not even 5 minutes. And along lonely roads, the paved one riddled with yawning cracks, the dirt ones peppered with countless potholes. The few houses we see as we pass are basic, functional structures, mostly modular homes clad with colorful siding, all of them sitting above the ground on wooden legs. Because of the permafrost, Agnes explains. I've made a mental note to look up permafrost in the dictionary when I have internet again. Agnes has her seat pulled forward as far as it can go and sits straight-backed so she can see over the dash, her diminutive stature a challenge behind the wheel in a pickup truck. If I were in a more relaxed mood, I'd probably find it amusing. But it helps to be with Agnes. She's as calm in person as she was on the phone, her voice a lull as she points out the basic landmarks. The city of Bangor, about 5 miles to the east, and the Kuskokwim River beside it. That's the thick, snaking river I saw from above. She says it's a main artery off the Bering Sea, and it stretches far to the north, allowing for travel between villages by barge and boat during the warmer months, and by vehicle once it is frozen over in winter. It's the only way to drive a car to the villages, apparently, because there aren't any roads to connect Bangor to the rest of the state. On a clear day, Agnes promises I'll be able to see Three Step Mountain in the far distance. Right now, though, all I see are miles upon miles of flat land, freckled by low bushes, and capped by foggy skies. And a sleepy moss-green modular home at the end of a long, narrow driveway, banked by a garage and two small utility sheds.
"Well, here we are," Agnes murmurs, cutting the engine.
"My father's home, the place where I spent the first 2 years of my life. Even though I don't remember any of it, everything about this moment feels surreal." I take a deep breath as I climb out of the truck and trail Agnes up a set of creaky wooden steps and through a single door, only vaguely aware that she didn't bother to use her key. The door was already unlocked. I stop dead in my tracks, and my eyes widen with shock as I take in the army of green mallard ducks. The atrocious wallpaper covers every square inch of kitchen wall. It's not a large kitchen by any means, which makes it feel all the more enclosed. As horrendous as it is, I stifle the sudden urge to giggle. This must be what my mother was talking about. I can't wait to tell her that she was right, that she does still know my father. Agnes tosses the truck keys onto the counter.
"Ren always forgets to open these before he leaves in the morning."
She stretches on her tiptoes to yank the cord attached to the blinds on the window over the sink, allowing the murky daylight in to illuminate the golden oak cabinets, the cream-colored laminate countertop, and the matching shade of vinyl flooring, a pattern of squares with small burgundy triangles accenting each corner. It reminds me of the flooring my grandparents had in their basement. With only the small window above the sink, the one in the door, and a single bulb light fixture above, it's dim in here. I can only imagine how oppressive it would feel during the long winters. "When does it get dark anyway?" I ask, curling my arms around my chest more for comfort than heat.
"At this time of year, the sun sets just before midnight and then rises around 4:15. But it doesn't get really dark at night now. Not like it does in the winter."
My eyes widen. I knew the days were long, but a midnight sunset?
"I replaced the blackout shades in your room. The old ones were tattered. You'll definitely want to draw those. Unless you're like your father, who doesn't mind sleeping in daylight."
Agnes wanders to the fridge.
"You must be hungry. Help yourself to whatever's in the..."
Her brow crinkles as she holds the door open to show shelves bare of food, save for some condiments and a few beverages.
"He promised he'd go grocery shopping," she mutters under her breath,
quiet enough that I don't think she meant me to hear it. She lifts the carton of milk to open it and give it a sniff. Her nose crinkles.
"I wouldn't drink this if I were you."
"It's okay. I can't drink milk anyway. I have a dairy allergy. I was diagnosed with it when I was 5, something I'm sure my father doesn't remember." She pushes the fridge closed.
"I'm sure he was waiting until he could see what you like."
She gives me a tight smile.
"Meyer's opens at 8:30. He'll take you there first thing."
It's a good thing I'm not hungry then. Yet again, I can't help but wonder if my dad actually wants me here. Surely he could have grabbed a few basic food items to have in the house to feed his daughter when she arrived, if he cared enough to. "When exactly did you tell him that I was coming?" Agnes hesitates, reaching for the stack of mail that sits on the counter, slowly rifling through it, her eyes stuck on the labels.
last night. I think back to our email exchange from Friday when I wrote to tell her that I had booked the plane ticket. Thank you, Simon, for footing the bill. She wrote back saying that my dad was so happy that I was coming. That was obviously a lie. Why didn't she tell him on Friday, right after receiving my email? Why did she wait another day? Was she expecting him to be something other than so happy? What did he say when she told him? What words were exchanged within these walls about my arrival, and with what tone? Abandoning the unopened mail, Agnes sets to picking dried leaves off a basil plant that sits on the top shelf of a tiered stand by the door, her face pulled into a frown of concentration.
Make yourself comfortable, Calla. Your dad should be back soon.
Sure. My gaze flutters about. I feel anything but comfortable right now. The kitchen certainly has all the necessities. The basic white stove and fridge, a simple round wooden dining table set that wears plenty of dents and scratches from years of use, a worn stainless steel sink with a window above it that overlooks the sprawling flat landscape. And yet, nothing about the space is particularly welcoming. It's not like our spacious and bright kitchen in Toronto, with a dreamy bay window and the cushioned window seat that runs alongside it, an inviting corner to curl up in with a book and a hot chocolate on a cold winter's day. But maybe my discomfort has nothing to do with the decor, and everything to do with the fact that whatever excitement I was feeling over seeing my father has quickly been squashed by the mounting dread that I am unwelcome here. I inhale. The air is ever so faintly tinged with the acrid smell of burnt wood and ash, like that from a wood stove. Not cigarettes, I note. He quit smoking, right?
He's working on it. Come on, I'll show you to your room.
Agnes leads me out of the kitchen and into a long, narrow living room. At least this side of the house is free of mallard ducks, but it's also void of any personality. Equally dim, even with a light shining from overhead. The walls are white, with a few pieces of unremarkable, snowy landscape artwork. The carpet is a shabby oatmeal color, a worn path from the threshold to the simple black wood stove atop beige tile in the far corner visible.
When your dad's not working, this is where you'll find him. Here or out there.
She casts a hand toward a screened-in porch on the other side of a window that's larger than the one in the kitchen, but still much too small for this size of room. Aside from a few folded newspapers sitting in a heap on the wooden coffee table, it doesn't look like the room is used much. As ever, Alaska Wild is clearly his priority. But there, sitting on a side table at the far end of the gold, black, and green woven couch, is the infamous checkers board. I wonder if it's the same one from oh so long ago. I feel Agnes's eyes on me. It's cozy, I offer.
You're as bad a liar as Wren, she smiles. I keep telling him the place needs freshening up. I've even left a few of those home renovation shows playing on the television for him.
She waves a hand at the small flat screen that sits in the corner, opposite the wood stove and across from a tan-colored lazy boy.
But he keeps saying he's not around enough to bother.
Her voice drifts, her gaze settled on that chair, her seemingly permanent smile slipping. Why doesn't she do it herself, then? Won't he allow her? He'll be home more in the coming weeks, though, right?
Yes, I suppose so.
There's no point dancing around the topic of my dad's cancer diagnosis anymore. How bad is it, Agnes? She shakes her head.
That slip of paper was full of medical babble that I couldn't understand.
But he told you what the doctor said, right?
Who, Wren?
She snorts softly.
He was sick for weeks with a terrible chest cold before I finally convinced him to go see someone. The doctor decided to run an X-ray, and that's how they found the tumor. He didn't tell anyone, though. He just took his antibiotics, and I assumed he was getting better. Then the bugger flew to Anchorage for a secret biopsy and more testing.
I can hear the frustration in her voice.
All I've been able to get out of him is that he has lung cancer and the doctors have suggested chemo and radiation.
It sounds like they have a plan, then. I'd spent a bit of time on the Canadian Cancer Society website
while waiting for my connecting flights today, reading up on types and stages and treatment options for lung cancer. It was a lot to sift through and difficult to understand. All I managed to take away is that treatment is crucial and survival rates are among the lowest of all cancers. If I could see that paperwork, maybe I could Google...
I don't know where it is. He took it when I confronted him, made me promise not to tell anyone.
A promise she obviously broke by calling me. My own frustration begins to build. When do the doctors want to start it all?
Next week. He has to go to the cancer clinic in Anchorage for it. That's the closest one. Jonah said he'd fly him back and forth so he can be comfortable at home on the off days.
It's a good thing Jonah's much more willing to fly to Anchorage for my father than for me, at least. My gaze drifts over the inhospitable living room. Why don't you go ahead and redecorate then while he's gone? Some paint color, new artwork, a few lamps. Anything would be an improvement at this point. Amusement flashes in her eyes now.
Just come over to Ren's house and tear down that hideous wallpaper in the kitchen?
Her words catch me off guard. You mean you don't live here?
Me? No. I live in the little white house across the road. We passed it on the way in.
Oh. The puzzle pieces that I'd begun putting together, an understanding of my father's life, suddenly don't fit. So you're... neighbors?
For 13 years now. Your dad owns the house. I rent it from him.
Neighbors, co-workers, friends. And it's complicated. I trail her down the narrow hall, digesting this new information. I still think you should do it. My mom painted Simon's bookcases one weekend while he was out of town for a convention. Simon had paid a small fortune for the Golden Oak custom units before he met my mother. She despises Golden Oak. I remember watching the blood drain from his face when he walked through the door to see the new and improved soft white ones. He got over it. Eventually.
Yeah, well, I'm not Susan.
Agnes sighs in a heavy way that carries deeper meaning with it. She leads me into a small corner bedroom with chalky walls and a pink crystal chandelier dangling in the center of the room.
You should have seen all the boxes he had stuffed in here. Took me all day yesterday to move them out.
It took Agnes all day, I note. Not Agnes and my dad. The room is now empty of everything save for a metal-framed twin bed tucked into the corner by a small window, a wooden kitchen chair next to it, and a simple white chest of 3 drawers on the opposite side. There's a narrow closet with a louvered door on the wall directly beside me, the kind of old-fashioned folding door that our house in Toronto used to have, too, before we remodeled. Not until I move farther into the room do I realize that the walls aren't plain white, but adorned by faint pink calla lilies of various sizes. It finally dawns on me. This was my room. My mother once told me that she spent the long dark months waiting for me to be born, painting my namesake flower on the walls of my nursery. An entirely new hobby for her, inspired by boredom and the fact that she couldn't grow the real thing. Or anything for that matter. In the end, it kept her sane until the trip to Anchorage to wait out my due date at a family friend's house, as was necessary back then if you wanted to guarantee that a doctor would deliver your baby. Her skill has improved greatly over the years. She still paints sometimes, usually in the winter, when the gardens around our house are asleep and she's looking for a quiet escape from the daily grind of the florist business. Her studio is directly across from my bedroom, taking up the front half of the 3rd floor. The room is bright and spacious and decorated in canvases of ruby-red tulips and vivid peonies, bursting with pink-tipped petals, all done by her hand. Some of her new pieces now grace the walls of local restaurants and stores, a small sign beneath them naming her price to sell. But she's not in her studio often anymore, claiming that she doesn't need to paint flowers when she's elbow deep in real ones all day long. But 26 years ago, in a land that is unforgiving for so many things, this was her garden. And my dad has preserved it all these years. Agnes looks thoughtfully at me.
I figured you might like it.
I do. It's perfect. Thank you. I toss my purse to the floor.
It gets chilly at night, so I put plenty of blankets down to help keep you warm.
Agnes gestures at the colorful and eclectic stack of folded quilts at the foot of my bed, and then looks around the space as if searching for something.
I think that's everything, unless there's something else.
I hold my phone up. The Wi-Fi password?
Yes, let me find that. The bathroom is out here to the left if you want to freshen up. Your dad has his own in his room, so this one is all yours.
With a weary sigh, if I weren't running on the adrenaline of anticipating meeting my father, I'd probably nosedive right into that bed. I unzip the nylon track bag and begin emptying it, noting with frustration how little clothing I was able to fit, and how most of it is damp. Damn it. My black jeans are cold and wet against my fingertips, as is my sweater, my running gear, and the two other shirts I hastily stuffed into the right side of the bag, the side that Jonah so casually tossed into the puddle of muddy water. Gritting my teeth to keep my anger at bay, I fish out a small woven hamper from the closet and toss everything in.
Found it.
Agnes holds out a slip of paper between stubby fingers. Her nails are naked of any polish and chewed to the quick. Great. Thanks. Where can I do laundry? My clothes are wet, thanks to Jonah. I don't bother hiding the bitterness in my voice. She huffs softly and then reaches for the basket.
Jonah lost his father to cancer a few years back, and he's having a hard time dealing with Ren's news. I think maybe you got the brunt of it today.
So he does know? She nods.
Ren didn't want to tell him yet, but Jonah's too aware. He weaseled it out of me earlier today. Anyway, I'm sorry if he was a bit difficult.
Is that what crawled up Jonah's butt and put him in such a foul mood? If it is, it's still far from acceptable, but I don't have to dig too deep to find sympathy for him. But shouldn't he also feel at least a shred of sympathy for me then?
The machines are off the kitchen. Come on, I'll show you.
She slows, her dark eyes widening as she takes in the myriad of hair product, brushes, and pretty cosmetics cases that ate up half the track bag and now cover the top of the chest of drawers.
Do you use all of that every day?
Pretty much, yeah. There's double that sitting in my room at home. I only brought the staples with me. She shakes her head, murmuring,
I wouldn't even know where to begin.
A car door slams somewhere outside. Agnes turns toward it, pausing to listen. A few moments later, heavy footfalls land on the wooden steps leading up to the front door. She takes a deep, sharp breath, and for the first time since hearing her voice in the receiver, I sense nervousness radiating from her. Still, she smiles.
Your dad's home.
Chapter 7. I hang back watching Agnes's slight form as she walks calmly and casually down the hall, laundry basket balanced on her right hip. Nothing about this is calm or casual. Flutters thrash in my stomach, an odd combination of anticipation and dread. Will Ren Fletcher be the version I imagined as a small child growing up? His picture firmly grasped between my small hands? A quiet but kind man who would pick me up and toss me in the air after a long day of flying planes? Or will I be facing the version he became later, after he broke my heart? The real version, the one who has never made an effort to know me.
So, how'd it go?
Agnes leans against the wall that leads into the kitchen, her back to me, as if this is another typical day.
They've got their supplies,
comes the deep male response with a hint of a rasp. An odd sense of deja vu rises deep inside me. I've heard that voice say those words before. Many years ago, through a receiver, carried along thousands of kilometers of wire, occasionally tinged by static and the hint of an echo. Probably when I asked him what he'd done that day.
And the elk?
He responds with a faint chuckle, and it sends shivers down my spine because that sound is familiar too.
They finally chased them off the sandbar and to the east. Took them long enough, though. I almost had to turn around.
Silence lingers for 1, 2, 3 beats, and then...
So...
One word with such heavy meaning. She's in her room, getting settled. Jonah was a pain in the ass. Another chuckle.
When isn't he?
If my dad is angry with Agnes for bringing me to Alaska, he's hiding it well. Well, I'll let you go and say hello. Agnes disappears into the kitchen. I hold my breath as my heart races, listening to the floor creak and the footfalls of approaching boots. And then suddenly, I find myself face to face with my father. He's so much older now than he was in that tattered picture still tucked beneath my sweaters at home. And yet, it's like he stepped out of the frame and into real life. His wavy hair still hangs a touch too long, like something from the 1970s, but the brown has been mostly replaced by gray. Where his skin used to be taut and smooth, age has carved deep lines and crevices. He's wearing the same outfit, jeans, hiking boots, and a layer of checkered flannel. And he looks healthy. Only now do I realize that I'd been preparing myself for a male version of Mrs. Hagler, brittle and hunched over, with an ashen complexion and a chest-rattling cough. But to look at him, you'd never know he has lung cancer. 10 feet lingers between us, and neither of us seems to be ready to make a move to close it. Hi, I falter. I haven't called him Dad to him since I was 14 years old. Suddenly it feels awkward. I swallow my discomfort. Hi.
Hello, Kella.
His chest rises and falls with a deep breath.
Gosh, you're all grown up now, aren't you?
Since the last time you saw me 24 years ago? Yeah, I should hope so. But I don't feel like a 26-year-old woman right now. Right now, I feel like an angry and hurt 14-year-old girl, brimming with insecurity and doubt, acknowledging that this man, the one not moving a muscle to close this last bit of distance, made a conscious decision to not be in my life. I don't know what to do with my hands, but I feel the urge to do something with them. I tuck them into my jeans pockets, and then pull them half out, only to remove them completely and ball them into fists. From there, it's a fold and tuck into my armpits as I hug my arms around my chest. He clears his throat.
How were your flights?
Fine.
Good.
The bang of a metal door and the crank of a dial in the background reminds me that Agnes is still here.
Are you hungry? I didn't have a chance to go shopping.
No, I'm fine. I ate in Seattle. He nods slowly, his gaze studying the worn carpet beneath our feet.
How's your mother?
Great. No doubt on her third glass of wine and driving Simon insane as she paces circles around him in his chair, waiting to hear from me. I hesitate. She's shocked by the news. I don't think there's any need to elaborate further.
Yeah, well, it is what it is.
He reaches into his coat pocket to pull out a pack of cigarettes.
I'll let you get settled then. See you in the morning.
He turns, and just like that, he's gone, the kitchen door letting out a loud groan to signal his exit. I stare at the empty space where he stood. See you in the morning? 4 planes, 5,500 kilometers, and 24 years later, and all I get from my father is 2 minutes of polite conversation and, see you in the morning? Disappointment threatens to bowl me over. I sense eyes on me and look up from my daze to find Agnes there, her dark, worried gaze studying me.
Are you okay?
I swallow away my emotion. I'm fine. My shaky voice betrays me.
Ren isn't the best at expressing himself. This is a lot for him to take in.
I let out a breathy laugh, but all I feel is the urge to cry. For him? What about for me? At least the smile she gives me is sympathetic.
I'll move your clothes to the dryer for you.
Go on and get some sleep. Tomorrow will be better.
I'm glad for the dismissal. I duck into my bedroom, pushing the door shut behind me, fighting against this prickly feeling that's growing, the one that says I've made a terrible mistake coming here. I know the moment my phone is connected to the Wi-Fi because a rapid-fire succession of chirps sound, all text messages from my mother. Have you made it to Anchorage yet? Let me know when you get to your dad's. Are you there yet? Okay, I checked your flights and saw there was a delay from Seattle into Anchorage. Call me as soon as you can. I called Alaska Wild and they said you landed about 15 minutes ago. Have you made it to your father's? My thumbs pause over the screen, deciding what to say. If I give her an honest rundown, she'll insist on calling, and I don't have the energy to dissect this disastrous reunion with her and Simon yet. I made it. You were right about the small planes. I'm exhausted. I'll call you tomorrow. First thing, okay? We love you. And remember to take lots of pics. I quickly swap my clothes for my pajamas, one of a few clothes items that didn't get wet, thankfully, and dart into the bathroom to wash up. My father and Agnes are nowhere to be found, which makes me think they're outside talking. Shutting myself into my bedroom once again, I draw the curtain and crawl under the blankets with my phone, hoping to distract my dark thoughts. I pull up the picture that Agnes took earlier. As horrifying as the flight and that thing was, we pose well together, the plane's cheerful colors especially striking against the gloomy backdrop. The only flaw is the asshole standing inside the frame. Jonah's back is to the camera. His clipboard is gripped in his hand, but his head is turned to showcase the fur around his face and the fact that there's no mistaking it. He's watching me. If it were any other guy, this picture might tell a different story, a romantic tale of a man drawn to a woman. So not the case here. I play around with the various photo editing tools, cropping, tweaking, and filtering, until I have a stunning snapshot for Instagram, sans angry bush pilot. But my thumbs stall over the keyboard, unable to come up with a suitable caption. Diana's voice preaches in my head. Be upbeat and inspirational, bonus points for funny. I feel the opposite of those things right now. I always struggle with writing captions, not Diana. Then again, most of her posts don't sound like her, at least not my best friend Diana, the girl who shoves sweet potato fries into her mouth 5 at a time while she gripes about the lawyers at her firm. How can I make anything about today upbeat or inspirational? How should I lie? By keeping it superficial, that's how. Simple and light and happy. I quickly type in the first thing that comes to mind. City girl in the Alaskan wild. Love my life. I throw in a bunch of hashtags, another golden rule a la Diana, and hit post. All the while, I'm biting my lip against the worry that comes with my growing reality, that everyone would be happier had Agnes never made that phone call. I wake to soft ocean waves lapping rhythmically at the shore, a peaceful sound courtesy of the white noise app I use every night. For a split second, I forget that I'm unemployed and single. And in Alaska to meet a father who may be gravely ill but still doesn't want me here. Pushing the sleep mask off my face, I let my eyes adjust, focusing on the faint glow of daylight that creeps around the edge of the curtains. My muscles ache with weariness after yesterday's long, grueling day of travel. Or maybe it's this bed. My bed at home is a king. Big enough that I can sprawl sideways and never have a limb dangling over the edge, and dressed in memory foam to mold to my body. This one has all the qualities of a Salvation Army cot by comparison. The pillow's not much better, hard and lumpy against my face. I must have punched it a dozen times last night trying to soften it before giving up. I paw at the small wooden chair next to me until my fingers grasp my phone. I groan. It's not even 6 a.m. and I'm awake. Then again, I shouldn't be surprised. My internal clock thinks it's 10. I also shouldn't be surprised that my mother has sent 3 more texts. Are you awake yet? How is your father doing? Does he look well enough? Let me know when you're awake. She's also tried calling.
I'm not ready to handle the Susan Barlow Inquisition just yet. I mean, what would I even tell her? He looks healthy, meeting him was brief and awkward at best, and I don't know why the hell I came. There are also two messages from Simon. Be patient with your mother. Remember, you are a stranger to him as he is a stranger to you. No shit, Simon, I mutter. I'm sure there's a deeper meaning behind his words. There always is. Simon is who I need to speak with right now. I'm desperately in need of one of his shrink pep talks, but I'm sure he'll be prescription pad deep with real patients all morning, so my issues will have to wait. If there's one good thing about waking up this early, though, it's that I've bought myself a few hours before I have to call home. I sigh with satisfaction as I open up my Instagram to find more likes on my bush plane post than usual, and a dozen new followers. I can always count on Diana to leave a comment riddled with emojis and exclamation points, along with the usual comments from my friends and a few regular followers, the, love your outfit, beautiful shot, you're so pretty, I have that hat too. But there are a few other ones too. People claiming how lucky I am to be in Alaska, how adventurous I am, and how they've always wanted to go. These people, strangers, see a pretty, well-dressed girl embracing life. None of them know the real story of why I'm here, of why I'm already thinking about going home. They can't sense my loneliness or the knot in my stomach. That's the magic of social media, I guess. But there's also an odd comfort to hiding behind the illusion. If I stare at myself beside the orange and yellow toy plane long enough and reread the effervescent caption enough times, maybe I'll start to buy what I'm selling too. I spend a few minutes answering people until basic human need wins out. Throwing off the heavy layers of blanket, I pull myself out of bed and quickly change into the outfit from yesterday, my skin prickling with goose flesh from the crisp, cool air. It's refreshing in comparison to the stifling summer heat and the stale air circulating through the vents back home. The smell of fresh-brewed coffee teases my senses as soon as I crack my bedroom door. To my delight, I find the basket of my clean clothes, folded, sitting by my feet. I push it aside for the moment and pad softly down the hall, that same conflicting mix of anxiety and excitement churning in the pit of my stomach that I had last night. The living room is empty. So is the kitchen. Hello? I call out and wait. Nothing. Not a rustle or a floorboard creak or a tap running from his ensuite. It's eerily quiet, the tick, tick, tick of the kitchen wall clock the only sound. But my dad's been here, I can see, by the not-quite-full pot of coffee and the used mug sitting next to it, spoon resting inside. I poke my head out the door to see if he's having a cigarette. An old black Ford truck that's in only slightly better condition than Agnes's sits outside. But there's no sign of him, or so much as the lingering scent of nicotine. It's not until I've stepped back inside that I notice the sheet of lined paper sitting on the counter, next to the fridge. My name is scrawled across the top in tidy all-cap print. Next to it is a stack of American $20 bills. Didn't know what you'd want to eat. Keys are in the truck. Myers is 5 miles away. Go east to the end of the road. Turn right, then make your second left in town. The rain should hold off for the morning if you want to go for a walk. At the bottom of the page, there's a scribbled-out W as if he started writing his name and then decided against it, but he didn't replace it with Dad. I'm guessing he's gone to work. Does he always leave for work this early? Or was he avoiding me? On impulse, my fingers graze the ceramic of his used mug. It's still warm. Evidence that he was here, and not that long ago. He probably bolted the second he heard movement coming from my room, I realized with dismay. How he got to work without his truck, I can't guess. Maybe he got a ride from Agnes? Regardless, it clearly didn't cross his mind that I might not have my driver's license. No, you go ahead to work, Dad. What? But we haven't seen each other in 24 years? No biggie. I would never expect you to take an hour or two off. Seriously, I'll take care of myself, I mutter, trying to squash the sting in my chest. I spend a few minutes rifling through the bare fridge and disorganized cupboards to learn that my father lives off coffee, cheap sugar-loaded peanut butter, and frozen macaroni and cheese dinners. It's a good